All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. Week 16 edition of the show. Only 3 weeks of the regular season left in the NFL, and the Buccaneers going on the road for the final time, at least in the regular season, this weekend on primetime Sunday Night Football. They visit Dallas, 8:20 kickoff over there at Jerry World in Arlington. We're going to talk about the game today. The Bucs coming off of a huge win in Los Angeles. I keep wanting to say San Diego. 40-17, 8-6 on the season, winners of four in a row out of the bye week, which we said they had to do, and they've been doing it and continue to do it. And here we are now with the Buccaneers still in total control of their own destiny moving forward and in, let's just say, decent shape for the playoffs. I think people are getting a little too ahead of themselves. And I know all the playoff predictors have them at 80%+. If they win this weekend, it goes even higher, and that's great. But the Bucs are a long way still from where they want to be. And that'll be kind of the theme of this show today. And also just what a great effort it was in Los Angeles. Both things can be true. And that was phenomenal. I'll tell you what, I mean, the way that game was going early in the game, if you just saw the score and didn't know what else happened, oh, the Bucs won 40-17, dominant day, blah, blah, blah. Well, it was in the second half. But in the first half, the Bucs still outplayed the Chargers by a great deal, I thought. And they were outgaining them and doing everything. But the turnover bug bit him again, and you know, just this wasn't anything crazy, just missed throws, really. Baker Mayfield got picked off on one that he threw, a physical bad throw, like not a bad read or a missed, you know, just threw it behind Mike Evans and allowed the route to be undercut. So there was that. There was another, I mean, the turnover thing has been an issue, and the Bucs have been overcoming it and overcoming it and overcoming it, and a big testament to why they were able to do that on Sunday was because of the effort of the defense, who did an outstanding job against the Chargers, and Justin Herbert got him to throw an interception. We talked last week on the show about how he had had like 300-and-something attempts in a row without a pick. He was approaching the all-time record, hadn't been picked off since, what was it, week one or two or something like that. So the Bucs got him to do that. And what was the big reason they did that, by the way? Pass rush. And the Bucs got after it all day long. A lot of really good individual efforts on Sunday in a game that was a lot closer than the final score indicated as the Bucs pulled away in the second half. But we'll talk about all of it on the show today. First of all, if you want to get a hold of me, as always, the email address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com. That's BOBBYGAMEDAY. bobbygameday@yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can get me, same thing, @BobbyGameDay, Blue Sky, @BobbyGameDay. All kinds of ways to get a hold of me if you want to chime in or have anything you want to say. So first we'll start with the Chargers game, then we'll get to Sunday night and everything else in between. But the Bucs with the 40-17 win, what stood out? Well, first of all, Mike Evans. Going into the game, he was, you know, with 4 games left, needed 410 yards to get to 1,000. That works out to 102.5 yards per game. We talked about how, you know, averages don't usually work right on the average every single time. What he needed was a big chunk day where he got a huge, you know, it ended up being 159 yards. But yeah, something like that, 130, 140, 150, 160, one of those type of days to bring the average down for the rest of the other 3 games. And so he did that, 159 yards receiving, a couple of touchdowns on third down alone. And third down was the story of this game on Sunday, I thought, both offensively and defensively. First of all, Baker Mayfield just on third down, where the Bucs had a bunch of conversions and kept drives going. 8 for 9, 132 yards, 2 touchdowns. That's just on third down plays for Baker Mayfield. Mike Evans, for his own part, like I said, he had 159 yards receiving the entire day. But 4 for 4, 4 catches, 4 targets, 78 yards, 1 touchdown on third down. Meanwhile, the Chargers did not convert a third down officially. And it's only the 5th time in franchise history the Bucs didn't allow an official third down conversion. Chargers were 0 for 6. Now, on the was it the opening drive or the second drive? I think it was the second drive. No, it was the opening drive. The Bucs got the Chargers into third down, down inside the 20 in the red zone. It was an incomplete pass. There was a terrible ticky-tack pass interference call, which I had a big problem with. I hate bailout calls on plays that have no chance of working. The rush came up the middle. Justin Herbert had no time, just lobbed it up in the air like a total prayer off his back foot. And then there's minimal, if any, contact and they throw the flag. I have a big problem with that, especially on third down. But anyway, they got the first down as a result of that and did end up scoring a touchdown. The NFL does not count first downs acquired by penalty as a third down conversion. So if it's third and eight and you throw incomplete and the other team gets called for pass interference and you get the first down and keep the ball, to me that's a third down conversion. NFL doesn't count it that way. So thanks to the technicality, the Bucs hold the Chargers to 0 for 6 on third down and don't allow a single one. Like I said, only the fifth time in franchise history that's happened. All those games have come since 2000, and they won all but one. Justin Herbert, his numbers on third down, quite the contrast to the ones I just read you from Baker Mayfield. Herbert was 2 for 6 for 11 yards on those six third down opportunities, and the two completions were short of the stick. So just a really, really good day for the defense, especially. And if you look at what they were able to do, and early in the game, I thought the pass rush wasn't quite getting home. And I even, on my Twitter feed, you'll see it. It's up there. I was tweeting about it. You know, the secondary was kind of getting exposed a little bit, as has happened many times this year. Hard getting off the field when you can't get a pass rush on third down. And the Bucs weren't doing it. And the Chargers were like weaseling their way out of what looked like bad spots and finding a way to keep possession of the football. It was a frustrating game in the first half. And then after that, they kind of started to get a pass rush going. Both just, they were winning up front more often, number one. But number two, they were scheming some pass rush up and calling some different things to get more. And it worked. And especially when you have a guy like Herbert who was dinged up. Not that you want to be cruel, but he's not really moving that great. He's got a lower body injury that's still left over from last week. Clearly wasn't as mobile as he usually is. You got to put pressure on those guys and put pressure on them and put pressure on them. It helps your secondary out. If it's third and long, it helps out because they don't have time to run the routes necessary to get to the sticks. And the interception happened directly because pass rush got there. That's the straw that stirs the drink, folks. And I've said it so many times. Everybody knows it. It's not a big secret. Going into this season, I said it was the one thing I was worried about the most with the Bucs when we were doing our season preview shows and things like that. And it's been a mixed bag all year, but overall, pretty good. Pretty good. And it's getting better. And so that was a big reason why the Bucs were able to have such success, not just on third down, but holding the Chargers in general to just 17 points, which you will take every time in the National Football League, especially today. But Mike Evans had a big day. Lavonte David, folks, and he had a sack and a half. He shared one with Logan Hall, had a solo one as well. Lavonte David had 12 tackles, 1.5 sacks, and 3 quarterback hits. He was the only player in football to put up any type of a stat line with those three types of things yesterday. And on the whole season, okay, and this is aging Lavonte David. And I know he's not great. I've said, when you see him in coverage, it's one thing. But when he's doing what he does best, it's another. He's the only player in the NFL this season, anybody, only player, literally, with 100 tackles, 5 or more sacks, and 3 or more forced fumbles. One guy on that list, Lavonte David. Just an outstanding day. The other guys stepped up. Kayvon Merriweather stepped up. Had to see a lot of snaps with the injuries. Mike Edwards out. You know, Zion McCollum and Jamel Dean, and Dean got an interception. They did their job. And then the safeties, you know, you have to have guys like that, and especially with all the injuries, Kayvon Merriweather did a great job on Sunday. We'll talk more about the injury report looking at the game Sunday night. I am doing this show on Wednesday. Sometimes I record on Wednesday. Sometimes I record on Thursday. In this case, I'm recording on Wednesday. So much less is known injury-wise. By the time you hear this, more might be known. But for now, they just had a walkthrough today, and it's hard to tell much. But reporters at practice today were saying that it looked like K.J. Britt and Mike Edwards were out there. You can't tell if they're really good to go or not because everybody's not doing anything really. So they were there, present, and we'll see. Although Vi Jones, he forced a fumble on two consecutive plays. One was on the kickoff return, which the Chargers recovered anyway. But then the next play, first down, he forces another fumble and the Bucs recovered it. And he's doing a pretty good job over there. So that's the situation with that. But looking at that game on Sunday again, I mean, I can't say enough about a lot of individual guys. The offensive line, the run game. I mean, go watch the replay of that Bucky Irving 54-yarder. It's porn if you're into offensive line play. I mean, just gorgeous. And as I've been saying, there are so many people to tip your hat to for the Bucs' run game getting better. There's the offensive line. There's the running backs themselves, of course, Rashad White, Bucky Irving, and even Sean Tucker. There's Liam Cohen scheming it up. There's a lot of different reasons, but go back and watch it if you're in the mood for just some really quality football stuff, because it was beautiful. And that was just one play, but it was indicative of the way the Bucs had been running the football. And the game was already over at this point, but how good did it feel when it was 40-17? There was only a few minutes left. I can't remember exactly what the situation was, but it wasn't even a big play. Like, the game was over, even if the Bucs don't get it. But they lined up in third and three, and if they get the first down, they can kneel it out. They don't have to give the Chargers the ball back anymore. And I remember thinking, because it used to be, oh man, third and three, it's going to require some really tricky little short pass and, you know, try and, you know, wedge it into some tight window. It's the only way we're going to get this. Now I just say, hey, we know we're running it. You know we're running it. We know we're getting it. You know we're getting it. I know it. You know it. And they know it. And they just hand the ball to Rashad White. He didn't even get the initial hole. Wasn't even there. He bounced it out. Got the first down. Like, it's just like stealing now with the running game. Like, we're just getting the yards anytime we want to get them. And it's just, it makes a huge difference. And I've long been a proponent of the passing game. And I talk about how I don't really worry that much. It's overrated to worry too much about the running game. And you still, I mean, at the end of the day, you have to push the ball down the field and aggressively try to accumulate points and yards. That is the name of the game. But when you're able to stay ahead of the sticks to do that, or even get outright first downs on first and second down with their running game, and especially be able, once you have the lead, to be able to run the football and not just go three and out and punt because you're trying to run clock, but still control the ball that way, it's an enormous difference. It's night and day, and the Bucs offense has been able to do that. Then you put on top of that with what Baker Mayfield's doing. And he still hasn't been at his best. He's still turning the ball over too much. I mean, there's still more there with Baker Mayfield. It's encouraging because they've been able to go 4-0 in this stretch. And I know three of them weren't against very good teams, but the Chargers are an above 500 team playing for their playoff lives. I mean, this isn't like some gimme game. And the Bucs went in there and did that to them too. That was Baker Mayfield's 100th career start. And he now has 159 career touchdowns. That is the fifth most all-time among quarterbacks drafted first overall. The four ahead of him, you might be able to guess at least a couple of them, that had, and when I say the, let me correct that. 159 career TDs is the fifth most through their first 100 games of any quarterback drafted number one. Not their career, a lot of those guys went on to throw hundreds more. But only guys that had more through their first 100 games, Peyton Manning, Matthew Stafford, Andrew Luck, and Carson Palmer. So it's pretty good company. All those guys continued to have good careers after their 100th start. You know, obviously Manning and Stafford are still going, and Luck retired abruptly but was doing really well, and Carson Palmer had a bunch of injuries. But it bodes well for Baker Mayfield. And so even with the turnovers, if you're producing in that manner, you're going to be okay. And the Bucs offense, by almost any metric, continues to be a top five offense in the NFL. The defense is starting to come back to the mean a little bit in a good way, and there's still a lot of improvement there. But the quality of opponent was higher this weekend. Although the Chargers offense hasn't been nuts, it's certainly better than what they were seeing with, you know, Tommy DeVito or the Panthers or whatever. This week it gets a little more challenging. I mean, the Cowboys, let me tell you right now, this game actually looks tougher now than it did a few weeks ago when we were talking about the soft second half schedule, and we were talking about how they had the Giants and Raiders and Cowboys and Panther, and we were writing them all off. This is a 6-8 Cowboys team. They are 3-1 in their last four. They're 3-3 under Cooper Rush since Dak Prescott got hurt. So this isn't a case of, oh, we got a backup quarterback who can barely do anything and we're going to feast. Cooper Rush is competent. And obviously CeeDee Lamb's a big weapon. They use him all over the field. Defensively, it has been their issue. Although they've got some bright spots amongst all the bad things. The Cowboys, they're tied for fourth in the league in sacks. Obviously, Micah Parsons has a good portion to do with that. He's got 8.5 sacks on the year. Their third and third down conversion rate allowed, those are good numbers. Of course, overall, 29th in scoring defense, tied for 29th. Worst in the NFL, 32nd in red zone defense. 29th in run defense. Keep an eye on that one on Sunday night, as the Bucs look to keep running the football the way they always have this season. But in other words, they have a pulse. And they're not eliminated from the playoff race yet, at least not mathematically. I don't think anybody thinks they're going to make it, but they do. Until you're eliminated, you're always playing as if you're not. And they need to win out to do it. And it's not going to be easy. And honestly, they should have won four in a row. They lost that Bengals Monday night or last week on that freak play with the punt getting partially blocked and all that. Or else they were, I mean, we don't know for sure they would have won, but they were very likely in line to win that game before that whole thing happened. So it's going to be tough in primetime on Sunday night, a game that I guess I was naive to think would be flexed. And if you go on JoeBucksFan.com, if you go on the site, there's an article there he put up. It's a few articles down now, but talking about how this game was never going to be flexed. That's not how the league works. Looking at the rest of the slate, especially with a lot of the primo games spread out, like you couldn't, the Chiefs, the Texans, the Steelers, they're all already, the Ravens, I think it is. I have to look at who all the teams are. They're already, and they're, you know, we got the two Saturday games this week. And then the way the Sunday slate worked out, there really weren't a lot of great options at the end of the day. Plus, it's the Cowboys, and Jerry Jones still has a lot of pull. He's still the owner that probably is the most influential with the commissioner. And yeah, I'm glad. It'll be fun. I mean, I'm looking forward. If this game was Sunday at 1 o'clock, same exact scenario, same exact setup, but it was at 1 or even at 4, wouldn't you be a little less excited? I'm more excited now. And this is the fourth time in 4 years that the Bucs and Cowboys have played in primetime. In fact, the Bucs and Cowboys, whenever they play each other, it always seems to be in primetime. Of course, 2021, the year after the Super Bowl win, the Bucs were that home opener Thursday night to kick off the whole season, and it was against the Cowboys. Then 2022, again, they opened with the Cowboys. This time it was on the road. It wasn't Thursday night. It was Sunday night football. At Dallas, they won that one 19-3. Then they closed the same season with the playoff Monday Night Football wild card game, primetime loss. Then they didn't play them last year at all. Now this year again, it's a Sunday night or just before Christmas. And hey, listen, this is probably the best weekend of the year to have the Sunday Night Football game. I mean, I'm going to have, I always talk about this, I always say it at the end of every show, I say, hey, use Bucks football or football in general as an excuse to get together with friends. Don't just sit there and watch the game alone on your couch. Call up your friends. Call up your family. Get some wings. Get some pizza. Get some whatever and have a good time with it. Well, hey, listen, there are no excuses. It's the Sunday before Christmas. Christmas is Wednesday. There is no school on Monday if you have kids in the mix. Depending on your job, there's a decent chance you don't have work on Monday. Some jobs you still do. But at least for a lot of people, you won't. Because yeah, I know how it is with my buddy. All of you have probably gone through this, especially if you're like, you know, have a big group of friends and you all went through high school or college together, then your 20s, and then you had kids. We used to do stuff all the time, and I didn't just Bucks football, anything. Didn't matter what night of the week, didn't matter, excuse me, what time. We just did stuff constantly. We'd go out on Tuesday nights to Soho or whatever. So obviously that changes. But now, like, some of my friends are, like, total wusses. Like, it's Sunday night football, and I'll say, hey, my house, you know, 8 o'clock, come over. Let's watch the game together. Oh, well, I got to go home at halftime. You know, it's late. What happened to us, man? Like, don't come here with that stuff. You can have a wife. You can have kids. And your whole, the way you hang out with your buddies, it's going to change a little bit, okay? Of course, it's always going to change a little bit. But fundamentally, it shouldn't change that much. In fact, you need that stuff more. You need that stuff more once you get into married life and kids, and it can be kind of redundant, and you know, people lose touch with their friends. Hey, I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist or anything, but you got to keep those connections. Here's a great chance to do it. And don't let your buddy tell, well, I got to go home early. We can't stay up till midnight. Like, seriously, I go to bed probably, well, I've always been a late night guy. But I go to bed a little bit earlier now than I may have in my 20s. But I mean, come on. You're not a freaking six-month-old. You can stay up a little bit late. It's the playoffs, practically. Not literally the playoffs, but practically. Because the Bucks need to keep getting wins. They can lose one more. If the Bucks lose one more, we'll talk about it in a minute. There's some scenarios. We're at the point now we can... I don't want to talk about scenarios at first. We will now. Anyway, my point is, these are big football games, and you got practically what's like a, it's almost like a Saturday night, even though it's Sunday for a lot of people. My buddies, I expect them to be, or hey, if anybody else wants to host, I'll go to their house, but my house seems to always be the one we host at, which is fine. I'm going to get the pool, the TV out back by the pool. I'm going to fire the hot tub up. We're going to have the TV inside for people who want to be inside, the TV outside for people who want to be outside. We're going to do it big. And I'm not going to listen to people trying to say, I got to go home in the second quarter. Don't be that guy. I'm giving you personally, listener, right now out there, just some life advice. Don't be that guy, all right? Now, or at least not all the time. Sometimes, I got something tomorrow morning. I got to do a big presentation. Okay, but don't be the guy who's always trying to bag it early, all right? That guy's annoying. That guy brings the group down. Don't be that guy. So anyway, Sunday night against the Cowboys, 8:20 on NBC. It always, and I know the Bucs haven't had a great deal of success in primetime. They're 0-3 this year. Lost a couple of Monday nighters, and of course that Thursday nighter in Atlanta, which still bothers me. And if they had won that Thursday nighter in Atlanta, they would have all but wrapped up the division by now. But as it is, Falcons are only a game behind. If the Bucs lose and the Falcons win, then, you know, guess what? We're still, you know, we're in second place. Now, if the Bucs win two of their final three games, one way, let's say Atlanta wins out and goes 3-0, and we go 2-1, finish 10-7, Atlanta would win the division in that case. But if the Bucs go 10-7, they still have a very, very high chance of being a wild card as long as they're 10-7. They cannot go 9-8, in my opinion. First of all, Atlanta would catch them, I think. And second of all, they'd also likely not be good enough for a wild card, even with some tiebreakers. But if they're 10-7, hopefully you win the division. I think Atlanta will lose at least one more time. But even if Atlanta didn't, you should be okay. And of course, you've all probably heard the news by now that Kirk Cousins has been so bad against every single team except twice against the Buccaneers, frustratingly, that they have decided to bench him, although you'd think he was Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and Fran Tarkenton all rolled up into one watching him play the Bucs those two times. But against everybody else, an atrocity. And even though they won the other night on Monday night, he has been benched after that win over the Raiders. My God, was that... Listen, I always say any football is good football, and you're going to miss this in the doldrums of March and April and May when there's no football anywhere in sight, and you'd kill for a crappy Thursday night game, anything at all. Well, that Monday night game between the Falcons and Raiders this past week tested the limits of that theory, because that was, I mean, those were crimes against football, what they were doing out there. It was horrible football. And the only reason I was interested in it, I wouldn't have even watched it, I would have watched it because there was two games going on. But the Bears-Vikings wasn't very good either, number one. And number two, obviously, Falcons-Raiders had implications. But looking at the Raiders, I mean, hey, beggars can't be choosers, right? If we're going to go out there and be happy that the Raiders looked so incompetent against the Bucs last week, it's kind of, you know, selfish to then expect them to all of a sudden look competent the next week against somebody else. If you want them incompetent against you, they're probably going to be incompetent against the Falcons too, and that's what happened. And they still had a chance to win that game. Very frustrating, but hey, shouldn't matter. The Bucs don't need help. They are in control of their own destiny, and I'm reasonably certain 2-1 probably gets it done, even if they do drop one. I'll say one thing that I'm worried about more than one thing Sunday, but a thing that worries me, Dallas is 1-6. I didn't even realize this until I started doing some reading about the game Sunday. Dallas is 1-6 at home this year. And the one win was Thanksgiving Day against the Giants. They haven't won on Sunday at home yet. And the Bucs are 5-2 on the road. Of course, they've won three road games in a row. Three of their last four have been road games in this four-game winning streak. But man, 1-6 at home, like that feels like, I don't like that. Like that feels like, I'm always a big believer in regression to the mean, where regression can be positive or negative. And I feel, even though each game is an independent event, just like flipping a coin, like when you flip a coin and heads comes up four times in a row, it doesn't mean tails is more likely to come up the next time. It's still 50-50. But I just don't like Dallas being 1-6 at home. I feel like them going 1-7 at home is less likely than them going 2-6 at home. I feel like both are pretty unlikely, to be honest. But they've already gone 1-6 at home. But yeah, that just, I don't know. It feels, I don't think it's something I want. I am glad they at least won this past weekend. I don't like them coming off of... I never like my opponents coming off a loss in Dallas with a nice win against Carolina. Should have won that game against the Bengals too, really. I mean, that game was a freak play away from them having won that and being winners of four in a row. But that just jumped off the page at me. The Cowboys 1-6 at Jerry World this year. And I'm not worried about going on the road or anything like that. I mean, I don't think that environment there is anything special or anything like that, but it's just something that, you know, I'd prefer they were like 3-4 at home or something, maybe. That'd be a lot better. But anyway, email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. Twitter at BobbyGameDay. And same thing, Blue Sky at BobbyGameDay. One thing I wanted to mention here regarding contracts, nothing to do with the game on Sunday, but a little bit of news came out today. This is per Greg Allman, who's the NFC South writer for Fox Sports and does a great job. He's still, I mean, he's still Tampa-based. He used to be the Bucs beat writer for The Athletic, and he's still pretty heavily, like if you follow his Twitter feed and read what he puts up, it's mostly Bucs stuff. But they have this thing called proven performance escalators in the NFL. And what proven performance escalators are ways for guys to earn incentives and earn money closer to what they're worth based on their production when they're in their rookie contract. So they're basically mandatory awards afforded to rookies who were drafted in the second round or later, second through seventh rounds, who have participated in XYZ number of plays for their teams. It's an escalator that's in every rookie contract for both offensive and defensive players. They're divided into levels, but basically it's based on playing time. So let's say you're a fourth round pick and then you end up being an actual major factor for your team. Well, if you participate in whatever it is, 50% of your team snaps in two of your first three seasons, or if you average 60% of your team snaps through the first 3 years, you get kicked up in your salary. And then same thing, level two, it's just a little lower percentage threshold, level three. So basically the Bucs had four guys who are going to be getting it for this upcoming year that were eligible this year. Tight end Cade Otton was making $1.1 million. Well, in 2025, that's going to get bumped to $3.24 million. So he goes up a little over $1 million. Running back Rashad White, $1.4 million base salary. That goes up to $3 million now. So a doubling of his salary for next year. Luke Getteke, same thing. A little bit more he was making to start out at $1.55 million. That goes up to $3 million. Zion McCollum, making $1.1 million now, will make $3 million next year. So it's not a bad thing. First of all, if you total all those increases up, it's an extra $7 million the Bucks will pay out to those four guys, and that will go against their cap for 2025. It's not a big deal. There's lots of cap space right now, or at least there is compared to what the Bucks have been used to. Second of all, it's a testament. This is the 2022 draft by Jason Light. So when you have four guys from the same draft, and again, this isn't even your first-round picks because they have big contracts already. This applies to second round and later. When you have four guys from that draft qualify for these PPE escalators, that's really, really good. I mean, it's a testament to the kind of job you're doing as a general manager if you're drafting that way. So, I mean, hats off to the type of... Listen, and they haven't done it yet, but the Bucs are on the doorstep of a fourth straight division title, and the fifth one that they didn't win was the year they won the Super Bowl. So that's a five-year run, and they haven't done it this year yet. And I don't want to jinx, not that I believe in jinxes, but you know, it's a five-year run of this team being perennially involved. And I always say, just be good enough to be involved, be around it. You're not gonna. I don't believe in like, okay, this is our window. We have this 1 or 2 year window. We have to win the Super Bowl. I just believe in consistently being decent, and then every once in a while you'll hit where you're really, or even in 2020, we didn't think they were really, really good, obviously, as the year was going on. In fact, they were below 500 at one point, but then they got hot late, got hot in the playoffs. Of course, they had Tom Brady, so that just having Tom Brady felt like a window. But even now without Tom Brady, they have been a competitive, competent, and contending ball club all the way through here, and they are again right now, although they haven't clinched anything yet in 2024. So you look at these guys from the 2022 draft getting all these incentives, that says something about the job Jason Light has done. This year's rookie class, the 2024 draft, here's some numbers the Bucks put out the other day. The 2024 Bucks draft class of rookies has played 1,624 snaps this year. That's the fourth most of any team in the NFL. They have 1,455 yards from scrimmage. That's the second most of any rookie class in the NFL. And they've got 10 touchdowns to account for. That's tied for the most of any rookie class in the NFL. So the 2024 rookie class Yeah, obviously Bucky Irving's a big part of that. Jalen McMillian is doing some, he had another nice day the other day, so he's starting to come around. So again, like it's looking like the Bucks are a well-run and first-class organization right now. This is very nice. And the day it all changed, I still go back to when I saw the SportsCenter update. And it wasn't like, they still had Jason Light before that. They still had the same ownership before that. But I remember all the rumors about Brady and finally seeing, yes, Tom Brady is coming to the Bucks. And it didn't seem real because, like I've always said, that never seems like the type of thing that happens to the Bucks. But that and the Bucks announcing that they were going to go back to their regular uniforms all happened in the same offseason. And then it's been pretty much good things ever since. Not great. I mean, they've had, ups and downs, but division championships, Super Bowl, first-class organization, good drafts, all those things. It's been a pretty good 5 years, and we hope to keep it going. Again, they haven't won anything this year yet, but I just thought that was something that deserves some mention, obviously just because of how well it reflects on the team, also because of the little bit of an extra salary cap bump they're going to have for next year. But that's not even the main point. It's no big deal. You want these things to happen every year, and the Bucks will gladly take an extra 7, 8, 5, whatever million against their cap every year if it means it's because they are doing things this well in player acquisition. And so I thought that was something worth mentioning. Let's hope the rookie class keeps piling up numbers on Sunday night against Dallas. 8:20 kickoff. You got all weekend and all to get ready. And let me tell you, we're in that time of year now. I love it too, even though I don't like that things are ending, and that's what we're getting to the point of, where things are ending. But once college football gets into the bowl season, you've still got college football going on, but now we got those Saturday NFL games. So we got two games on Saturday, and they're using the same four teams. Actually, let me look here, because the way they did this is interesting. They want to play games on Christmas Day. Like, that's the next frontier the NFL's going after. So we've got a couple of Christmas Day games this week on Wednesday. But how do you turn teams around if you want to play on Wednesday if they played on Sunday? We can put them on Thursday the previous week so they have, 6 days off, or at least 6 days between games. Well, they're putting them on Saturday. So the same four teams that play on Saturday this week, it's Texans, Chiefs, Saturday at 1. And these games are on Netflix, I think, right? Or is that? No, the Christmas Day games are on Netflix. Saturday is regular broadcast. So Texans, Chiefs, Saturday at 1. Steelers, Ravens, Saturday at 4:30. Take those same four teams, change the matchups for Christmas Day. Chiefs, Steelers, Christmas Day, 1 p.m. Ravens, Texans, Christmas Day, 4:30 p.m. Those are the Netflix games. And now you've at least given them 3 days between games, which is still pretty short. It's as short of a turnaround as the NFL does. They don't go any shorter, and they don't even usually go that short. Usually it's 3 off days between. If you play on Sunday and you have the Thursday night game, you're Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you're down. In this case, they're playing on Saturday. So no, I guess it is the same. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. That's the same as having the Thursday. Okay, yeah, it's not that big of a difference then. I was thinking they only had a couple days off, but they have the same amount of days off as if you play on Sunday and then again on Thursday. So it's clever scheduling by the league to use those same four teams and just put them together and pair them up, and then that way you don't have to worry about anybody having a rest disadvantage. And it's nothing they haven't been doing already. And I love it. I'm going to tell you this right now. People complain. I never understand why they complain, but and the complaints have quieted a little bit now. But people used to always complain about Thursday night football and how the product isn't good or whatever. Are you kidding me? First of all, we've had plenty of good games on Thursday. Second of all, again, we're not talking about Thursday night football versus even better Thursday night football. We're talking about Thursday night football versus no football. I love what the NFL has done with Thursday night football. And I, listen, like spending time with my family. Holidays are about other things. I get it. No. Put sports on all holidays because everybody's home. Everybody's hanging out. Everybody's watching TV. Everybody's having family get-togethers. And again, I like having the family get-togethers. I'm not saying I want to ignore my family, but why not have a TV on in the living room while everybody's getting together? And it's communal. Like, we're all sitting there watching it. We're commenting. I'm watching games with my uncle or a cousin that I don't usually see that often. And it's great. There's no reason not to have as many sports. Listen, I know it's hard on the people actually, the players, the coaches, and not just the players and coaches, but the usher in Section 318 who works every home game but now has to work on Christmas as well. The TVP, I work on TV crews sometimes, so I know. The TV guys, they're all going to be in the TV trip. So that's hard. I get it. You're asking people now to work on what should be a holiday, and Thanksgiving, at least it's been that way for many decades. This is a new thing in Christmas. So selfishly, yeah, I get it for them, but as a viewer, I absolutely love it. I cannot get enough. So this whole week, I'm looking at the calendar, I'm thinking, okay, we got Thursday night football tomorrow. Friday's the first college football playoff game. There's some bowl games. The Gators play one of the early bowl games here in Tampa, Gasparilla. But then Friday night's Indiana-Notre Dame. Saturday, you've got NFL during the day, college football playoff at night, the other ones. Sunday, you've got NFL all day. Monday's Monday night football. Tuesday, we're down, but that's Christmas Eve. And then Wednesday, there's two games again. Then Thursday night football, and you're back into it. Because these days without football, I call them down day. Like this past Tuesday and today's Wednesday. Boring, right? There's no football. At least we got bowl games now. I mean, they're not the best, but there's something. But if you can get through Tuesday and Wednesday, which if you're listening to this, you already have because I'm recording this on Wednesday, it's football nirvana going forward, baby. And yes, we are getting toward the end, but we're also getting to the best part. And that's the part that excites me. So enjoy everything about it coming up. By the time I do another show, I guess it'll be after Christmas. So this is our last show pre-Christmas. So enjoy yourself. You know, it's always about family and friends. Have people together Sunday night. It's a holiday week. Things should be a lot more jovial and a lot more merry. It's Christmas season. You don't have to probably, you definitely don't have school. Your kids don't have school. But if you're, you know, if you have work, there's a good chance maybe you don't have it, and have a great time with it. And then after that, we roll right into next week almost seamlessly. I'm still going to go out with my usual, but we got to get the Sunday Night Football music first before we go out with Black Box. I want to thank the Joes, joebucksfan.com, single best place anywhere, TV, internet, radio, for Bucks coverage. Thanks to them for giving me the platform. Always appreciate it. Thanks to you for listening. Have a great holiday season. Enjoy Sunday Night Football. The Bucks in primetime. It may not be the last time. If they get the job done in the playoffs, or making the playoffs, then we could have them on again. But that's getting ahead of ourselves right now. A lot of work still left to do. And a loss on Sunday night, which is very, very possible, could change everything. So let's keep our eye on the ball. But until then, and actually let me get back to my usual out music, because tradition is tradition. Where is it? Now I can't find. This is what happens when I try and play two songs. I'm just pausing this one. Thanks to the Joes for having me on, as always. Thanks to you for listening. There it is. I'll be back next week. Have a great holiday, whatever it is you celebrate, if you're religious, not religious, different religions, whatever it is, doesn't matter. Just get together with people you love spending time with, whether it's family or friends. And I'll talk to you next week, hopefully talking about a 9-6 football team. Either way. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to the Joes. I'm Bobby Fenton. That's your free stretch. Bucks Cowboys Sunday night. Enjoy it. Have fun. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.